people, my supervisor Veronica, Jack and Ewan. And we've written this up in these papers, and this one's yet to be published, but these two are published. First of all, I'm happy to be here. When I told my friends I was going to go to Canada, they all referred to this South Park episode that I haven't seen. But I thought it was funny because, of course, there are a lot of hockey references. And then the first seminar I went to, I noticed that this was the pointer. And that was great. So as Itai said, I'm going to be here for an entire term. So please feel free to discuss anything you want with me or propose a project. Cool. What I'll talk about today is two hierarchy problems. So when I see hierarchy problem, everyone thinks about the electroweak hierarchy problem. But there's also what I call the inflationary hierarchy problem, and I'll explain what that means in a second. And then I'll explain how hierarchy problems can be addressed by Goldstone bosons. So that leads to compulsive Higgs models for the electroweak problem and to Goldstone inflation models for inflation. And then in particular, I'll talk about a model that can realize both of these solutions all at once, and will also meet the CMB in collider constraints. And then I'll go into detail on how we derive the scalar potential, how inflation works in this model, and how you can realize perturbative reheating in this model. But the key message is really that scalar fields are very popular in cosmological theories, but it's been long known that fundamental scalars have hierarchy problems. So maybe scalars may not be fundamental, but they can be Goldstone bosons. So then a shift symmetry will stabilize their potential. Right. So I won't go into detail about the electroweak hierarchy problem because I assume that everyone's pretty familiar with that. But what I call the inflationary hierarchy problem is the fact that if you do inflation with a scalar field, and I'm talking about a single scalar field in this setup, and you do that with a potential, you notice that the potential needs to be exceptionally flat. And you can quantify how flat by taking the amplitudes of the CMB and isotropy to express the height of the potential as a function of R. And you get something that the height of the potential typically lies around 10 to the 16 GeV or around the typical gut scales. And you can also take the amount of inflation that you need to generate the right perturbations, and then you get something that will be around the Planck scale, also as a function of R, but for any measurable, normal function, normal R, you have a field excursion around the Planck scale, and this is, of course, the familiar Lyth bound. Now, these two things are modulo R are about two orders of magnitude apart. So that's a very flat potential. And you can, of course, cook up a flat potential, but it also needs to be radiatively stable. And generically, it's not for scalars. Right. So that's what I call the hierarchy problem of inflation. Now, if you're familiar with compulsive Higgs models, you know that Goldstone bosons can solve hierarchy problems. So you can impose a symmetry on the potential, and the symmetry is, in this case, a shift symmetry, and that protects it from higher dimensional operators or higher order corrections. And in this case, the scalar is a Goldstone boson of a global symmetry, which I call G, broken to its subgroup, which I will call H, at some scale F. And if the scalar is a Goldstone boson, its potential is forbidden at tree level by this continuous shift symmetry. Now, if G was never an exact global symmetry in the first place, for instance, if it was only an approximate global symmetry in some sector of the theory, or if you gauge a subgroup of G, then you can generate a small potential for the Goldstone bosons. And that potential will have a discrete shift symmetry. And examples of this are, of course, axions and pions, and there are many other examples. Now, using this to address the electroweak problem is definitely not new. In compulsive Higgs models, the Higgs doublet is Goldstone boson of the symmetry breaking G to H, where here this coset contains an SU2 doublet, the Higgs, and where H will contain the standard model group. And if you want to, the most popular modern models have also custodial symmetry implemented in H to protect the electroweak T parameter. In composite Higgs models, this the potential is generated radiatively by weakly gauging a subgroup of H of G, and then you can implement fermions. And most modern models have fermions implemented through partial compositeness. So you have an operator where the fermion couples linearly to this strong composite sector, and then loops of these bosons, these gauge bosons and the fermions, they can generate a potential. It will be a periodic potential in the scalar, the Higgs, over F. And so, of course, you can distinguish between this model and the standard model by the couplings of the Higgs sector, and they will generally deviate from the standard model by this function psi. So this is a very important object in composite Higgs models. Now, also for inflation, this mechanism isn't new. Actually, a very important or famous famous model of inflation, of which this is more sort of a general class, is natural inflation, where the Goldstone boson is an axion. So for axions, you can show that they get a potential through non-perturbative inciton type effects, and you can show that it will always have a sort of a cosine shape. And this one is implemented phenomenologically just to make the potential positive definite. Now, of course, this is a nice model because here the potential is protected from high dimensional corrections. But it turns out that if you lay the predictions of this potential over the CMB data, and I've done that here, but I don't think you can see it. This is the one sigma contour from Planck. Can you see it? I think you need to maybe imagine it. It is here, right? So this is the NS versus R plane. So this is the spectral index, basically the deviation from scale invariance of the CMB power spectrum. And this is R, the rate of tensor modes versus scalar modes. And so the Planck one sigma contour lies here. This is the two sigma contour lies here. And then the predictions of this model lie here for different values of this decay constant or this symmetry breaking scale F. Now, what you immediately notice is that you need to go above the Planck scale for F. And that's problematic, not only because we don't really know what happens above the Planck scale, but also because for global symmetries, that means that this model is not UV robust. So you'll be sensitive to quantum gravity effects. Now, what I mean with UV robustness is basically this. So there are lots of different models of quantum gravity, and I'm definitely not one to talk about that. But I have convinced myself that in you can make it quite general statement, and quantum gravity models do not preserve global symmetries. So that means they explicitly break the group G. For instance, by wormholes eating global charges or virtual black holes. All of this I read about in this paper. Sorry? It's his son, their father and son. Yeah. Right, so what that means is that, so you're breaking this global symmetry in another sector, and it's expected to be far dominant than these inciton corrections that give you the cosine potential. So a realistic potential will not be 1 plus cosine, but 1 plus cosine and something that far dominates it. And that's also demonstrated explicitly for this natural inflation model by these people fairly recently, beginning of this year.
It's a bit of a thank you to make sure I'm on it.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Because I know that there's a lot of discussion about this, and The issue of global symmetries is a subtle, you can be really concrete about it in string theory, because the string theory is like a theorem, right? That you can have global symmetries. But even there, it's a very fine line between a global symmetry and a very weakly coupled gauge symmetry. And so there's a lot of ways in which the things that you would like to have a global symmetry, you can in practice have, even though in principle there's a theorem saying you can't have them. So
yeah.
It's, and related to that is the issue of large fields. Whether or not you have large quantum corrections for large fields depends a lot on, as part of this, we will often be expanding in powers of the fields, and so then large fields is the same thing as large energy, and so then we're thinking that you're going to be in trouble because transplanking fields would be transplanking energies, and then it would be true that quantum gravity is important. But there are lots of examples where you have arbitrarily large fields, and there's no loss of control of your approximations at all. And the classic examples are in supersymmetric models, where you have flat corrections, and there's no energy cost at all, no matter how big your field is.
Mm-hmm.
And those are completely under control.
But then you have some shift symmetry. Or?
Not necessarily. So that's the interesting thing with supersymmetric models is that there are flat directions which are not parameterized as cosets, and so they're not shift symmetries in the sense mm-hmm. that you mentioned. And related to that, if you go back to the slide where you're showing comparing the natural inflation to the data, there's broadly speaking, even within the class of shift symmetries, there's if you take pseudo-Boltzmann bosons from G equals to H, the archetype that is being used there, where you get trigonometric functions, is assuming essentially you've got compact groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And very often you get non-compact groups, in which case you get exponential potentials, but same argument essentially. And those actually do a much better job describing the data than these ones do. So if anything, you can say the data is pointing you towards that class of Boltzmann bosons rather than this class.
No, I agree with that. Like, I'm just so this is a comment on natural inflation, which is the oldest possible realization of that. Okay, so I think you made three or four different comments.
Yep.
the first one being about that global symmetries, that a global symmetry is vaguely defined, or
supposing it itself an important problem, and
by promoting it to a gauge symmetry.
I wouldn't let the quantum gravity people tell you to stop. Because some of there's a lot of uncertainty in that statement. People say it assertively, but there's a lot of loopholes.
Okay, sure. I think what I want to say here is that so this model natural inflation only ever claimed to be a model, an effective theory around the scales of inflation. But then if you need to have a symmetry breaking scale which is above the Planck scale, which is, I would say, outside of the range of validity of the thing you're trying to describe, that might be problematic. And there may be loopholes. And there are definitely also lots of proposals that that sort of jump through these loopholes. But what I'm trying to say here is, wouldn't it be far better if you could have a model in which F doesn't have to be? So that's what I'm trying to do here. Now the second point, I can't quite remember what that was. It was
mostly a comment you might respond
to. Right, there are loopholes, and there are lots of other papers that I didn't cite here, but we do cite in the paper that indeed make use of these loopholes to get an effective theory that that works. But for this most basic, simple model, that is in principle a problem. Also, just because it's very vague. It's very difficult to sort of make. Yeah, to sort of make some to get an idea about this. So in principle, it's not robust against UV corrections because you can write down a way in which you can get higher dimensional operators here, and that would be C6 phi 6 over M Planck squared, for instance. And if phi is around the same scale, that's in principle a very large object. Right. So I would argue here that this most basic model is not a good effective theory. And this is a very simple thing that I did a really long time ago, but I plotted here again this prediction of natural inflation, and here are again these contours that you can't see. I didn't think that would fall away this badly. But what I show here is that even if you add some very small operators, C6, phi 6, as I said, for a very small dimensionless constant in front, you already leave this Planck allowed region. So not only, you know, with definiteness say that these things are not there, it's also the predictions of the model are also very sensitive to them being there. So then what we asked ourselves is, can we find models with the same mechanism for stabilizing the potential with a Goldstone boson inflaton, but then with only sub-Planckian scales? So a flat potential because of the Goldstone boson, but then also because we have sub-Planckian scales, we don't have to worry about all these quantum gravitational effects. So that's the first work we did. But then later on, we also asked, and can we also have a model in which we also have a Goldstone boson Higgs from the same symmetry breaking to which the inflaton perturbatively reheats? And for this first paper, we focused on perturbative reheating, but we're now working on non-perturbative reheating as well. This is just the most simple thing that we can look at the beginning. So I learned that this is Canadian slang. Double-double is apparently, it means a coffee with two creams and two sugars, I think.
Not just any coffee.
Tim Hortons. Which,
Oh,
okay, right. Yeah, I don't even really like Tim Hortons coffee.
Oh,
I said nothing. this is a time you may walk away. right, what I mean, of course, this is a double solution. So here, I try to realize a flat inflaton potential and a light Higgs from the same symmetry breaking, so with a common origin. So the Higgs doublet and the inflaton singlet under SU2 are both Goldstone bosons of the same symmetry breaking. And then I try to realize Goldstone inflation and compose the Higgs scenarios. Here, reheating happens because an inflaton, eta, decays to two Higgses, and that decays subsequently to the standard model. And as I said, for this first analysis, we looked at perturbative reheating. Now, the minimal realization of this is when you have five Goldstone bosons, a Higgs doublet and an inflaton singlet. So a minimal coset for which you have that is this SU4 to SP4 breaking, which is isomorphic to this SO6 to SO5 breaking. So that's what we looked at. Then, just as a little preview, in this model, you can realize mass hierarchies. And using the CMB data and also the constraints that we had to put on perturbative reheating, you can fix the entire spectrum as a function of the symmetry breaking scale and the Planck scale, and most often their ratio. So in particular, the inflation scale will be around 10 to the 15 GeV, as most typical models have. But then multiply by the ratio of FO for M Planck. And the inflaton mass will be this scale divided by F again. Right, so back to the effective theory. So to write down an effective theory for Goldstone bosons, the most a nice way to look at it is with this CCWZ mechanism. And because what we want to parameterize is a global SO6 of the strong sector, which spontaneously breaks to SO5 at some school F to give us five Goldstone bosons. But then to also explicitly break this group by gauging the standard model group. So if you count, that gives you two Goldstone bosons in the spectrum, where three of the Goldstone bosons are eaten. So two Goldstone bosons form the inflaton and the Higgs. And as I said, we use CCWZ to describe this effective theory. Right, so this vacuum, the vacuum that breaks SO6 to SO5, you can parameterize using, you can, this is a vacuum that breaks, a general vacuum that breaks SO6 to SO5 with parameterized by two angles, theta and alpha. And as it turns out, and as I can't really demonstrate here, but theta is basically describes CP in the model, and alpha describes custodial symmetry. Sorry, the other way around. Alpha is CP, and theta is custodial symmetry. Now, you can write down the Goldstone bosons in terms of this sigma field. So it's a couple linearly. So then here, T are the broken generators, and phi is the Goldstone field. And with this symmetry breaking vacuum in front, I didn't invent this; these people did. Right. So then now sigma transforms as a fundamental under SO6. So it transforms like this. So you can explicitly see quite nicely that the Goldstone bosons then have a shift symmetry. Right. So you can write down the gauge Lagrangian in the usual way. You use a covariant derivative. So I did that, and then you get this type of kinetic sector for the theory. Just usual canonical kinetic terms for the Higgs and for the inflaton, and then some sort of momentum dependent coupling, and then the Higgs coupling to these gauge fields. Note that here I've done some field redefinition, which makes you think maybe that this is not a periodic thing. In fact, it is. But I've just, the redefinition here is basically just sort of the assumption that you can expand the signs in linear order.
Are you saying you're expanding the essence of the fields, or is that first line really an exact statement?
Yeah, no, it's an approximate statement.
No, the first line is exact.
Evaluation is needed.
The gauge Lagrangian.
Here I've already done the field redefinition.
But it's an exact one.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering about is, should I, in the denominator, should I be expanding that power of h and eta, or is it really true that the metric is 1 over 1 minus h squared?
With this field redefinition, that's an exact statement. So you mean that there's a pull if these things, yeah.
No, this is the usual nonlinear signal model. You spend above h equals h and n equal to 0.
Right. So this, if you want to look at h equals 1, you just do a change of variables and you make that sort of thing.
Right. Then another choice that you need to make. So you had a choice in this vacuum that you defined, but another choice that you need to make is how you implement fermions. And here we implement fermions in the 6 of SU4. So that is because it decomposes under SU2 cross SU2 in this way. So you have a bi-doublet and two singlets. And now you're ready to write down the effective theory for fermions. Using form factors basically to parameterize your ignorance, if you want. So the knowledge that you don't have about what the UV theory looked like, you parameterize in terms of these form factors.
Are they functions or are they numbers?
They are functions of momentum. Yeah. Right. Now, with this effective Lagrangian, you can generate a Kolmogorov-Weinberg potential via loops. So that will look like this. But here, of course, I've given all these coefficient names, but in reality, they are very non-trivial functions of all these form factors integrated over momentum, and where this is a parameter of the fermion implementation, for instance, and there are also choices of vacuum here. So all of these functions are non-trivial, or all of these coefficients are non-trivial functions of the integration of these form factors and your choice of vacuum. So I just listed an example here, but the other coefficients are calculated in our latest paper. Right, so just maybe another preview. So I asked this question, can we find models with a Goldstone boson inflaton and that which decays to a Goldstone boson Higgs in a perturbative reheating? And I'll show you that we can, and that's this model that I've just derived. Right, so this is again what we looked at just now, the gauge sector and the Kolmogorov-Weinberg potential generated from loops. And these coefficients are these functions of UV dynamics, and the choice that I had to make in fermion representation, and the choice of vacuum parameterized by these two angles. Then, just to focus in particular on these two coefficients, because they are very important if reheating is perturbative, especially this one. But it turns out that in order to get these terms in the potential, I need to break CP. And I can do that in two ways. I can do that by how I implement the fermions, or by the vacuum that I choose. But I do need to break it. And these two are then related. They are both functions of the order parameter of CP breaking, if you will. Right, now inflation cares about the inflaton potential, obviously. And in this approximation, we assume that the Higgs will be stabilized around its minimum, H is zero, during inflation. And then we look at the Planck data. Right, so this is what I said. During inflation, the Higgs sits at its minimum. So then the kinetic sector will look like this. And this you can actually canonically normalize by using this redefinition in terms of this field phi. And then the potential looks like this. And here, for simplicity, I've just set that I set this term to zero. In this potential. That's just because we assume that to be smaller because it's CP breaking. But in principle, I may also add it, and then the predictions won't change drastically as long as it's small compared to these other parameters in the model.
Whether you can find a transformation that does this, mm-hmm. is the statement that the target space in your signal model is flat. And so is that, in this system, is it a flat target space, or is this something which you you can choose this form for a specific place for the value for H, for the other field? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, so the assumption is that H is at minimum, H is zero.
So this change of variable diagonalizes terms when h equals zero, but might not if h wasn't zero.
No.
But you don't need that.
Yeah, no. We use, so when h is not zero, we use a different field redefinition. Right, so this is a hilltop model for specific values of these coefficients, or rather for a specific relation between these coefficients. And hilltop models are, I guess, the most popular inflation candidates. For single scalar fields, and then you do inflation around the top of the hilltop. So this is where you would start typically, and this is where you get 60 E folding. So you end. Right. So then you can look at the Planck data, and again this spectral index versus tensor to scalar ratio, and again the two sigma lines have dropped out, but they are here. You just have to believe me, they are here. I can see them, but so what you see is that, so this is in the first approximation for FS1 and Planck. You predict a very, very small tensor scalar ratio, and here this is along this line, you vary the ratio between these parameters. But yeah, and then if you lower the symmetry breaking skill F, you will move down, so you predict even less tensors. Now you can also switch on this phi cube term, and then you generically move up. So this is the same prediction as this red line, but then with a small phi cube term as a percent of, like 1% of the mass of the inflaton.
Mm-hmm. So if you go back to the picture of potential, how do you arrange that to be true? Are you going to just start very, very close to the top? Is that why it's so small?
Yeah. So you have to Yeah, so that's so we don't address that. We just say this initial condition problem, or so we just say we start here, right at the top.
Principle, if you have a maximum, if you start right at the maximum, you can stay as long as you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a way you might imagine getting inflation. But Linde and Company argued that, in the sitter space, fluctuations will drive you off that maximum. So there's a criterion that says that if you really want to be close to the minimum, you can't go closer than a certain distance because of the fluctuations, which more or less asks for the second derivative to be small of potential at that maximum.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, Is that second derivative being small? Is the smallness of that the same thing as asking for f to be large? Or is there, what's the knob you adjust to make that second derivative small?
So the flatness of this potential here is a function of the ratio of these two things. So it's basically a cancellation between these two terms in the potential. So how flat this thing is a function of how these two things relate.
Mm-hmm. Or is that
So where do you have to go? Do you want to have lambda f squared much smaller than that, or much smaller? No, they're comparable. Close to half. Order one to precise value. Right, so in fact, actually, if this is an exact relation, if you saturate this, then it becomes exactly flat at the top, and that's problematic because then you get a scale invariant spectrum. But Planck indicates a deviation from a scale invariant spectrum, so you need to be close to this, but not completely saturate this. And how close to this you need to be is a function over as is a function of f over m Planck again squared.
It must be order of percent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's small, very small. Yeah. Right. So that's all I wanted to say now about reflation. Reheating is mainly cares about these couplings between the Higgs and the inflaton. So here we leave the approximation where H sits at this minimum, and we look at the full theory again with this kinetic sector, and now we consider reheating as a function of these things. Now the most stringent constraints for us is that we wanted to look at a perturbative reheating model in this first approximation. So that tells you something about. This is the Mathieu equation, which is the equation that dominates, that describes the process of reheating. And this equation is unstable for if these terms become important. So to suppress non-perturbative effects, these things need to be very small, this QI. And these QI are given here. They are functions of the value of the inflaton at the end of inflation and inflaton mass and scale factor and all these things. Anyways, we can translate this constraint on these QI functions in terms of the parameters of the models that we had. So, and that will give you, basically, it will give you a relation, again, between this C4, which was this term between the Higgs and the inflaton, both squared, and this trilinear term. And this is, again, like a constraint on that it needs to be small, which is something that we already expected because it parameterizes CP breaking. Right, so these are these constraints. And then the process that we looked at is so here we've done that other filter definition, which I don't have in my slides, but we do have in the paper. Phi is here, the inflaton, and chi is here, the Higgs. So then this decay will guarantee that you drain all the energy of the inflaton fields before the expansion drains it. And yeah, so in this calculation, that's a 1% here, we worked in the approximation that the inflaton is a classical condensate, which, and then the Higgs sits in that background, if you will. Right. Now, and then lastly, this is also a model for electric symmetry breaking, which of course tells you about these two Higgs parameters in the same way that composite Higgs models do. But it also gives you yet another constraint on this trilinear coupling. And that is because after electric symmetry breaking, when the Higgs gets FF, this is some sort of mixing between the inflaton and the Higgs. And that's heavily constrained. There are lots of analysis about standard model plus a singlet and that look at this coupling. And it needs to be very small, which is what we have plotted here for collider constraints and also projected constraints as a function of the inflaton mass. All of this is similar to what we expected from constraints on perturbative reheating and the fact that we break CP. Right, so this is where I want to finish. I presented the model that we built, a single model that addresses both hierarchy problems that I've described. And I've also shown you that this minimal model addresses both the Planck data and can realize perturbative reheating. Now, it's, as I've shown you in the previous slide, it also connects with electric data and it gives you boundary conditions for UV completion. And what I mean with that is that it makes statements about what these form, these integrals over form factors should look like. So that's some information about if you wanted to UV complete this theory, what it would look like in the low energy limit. So that's what I wanted to tell you about. Thank you. Let me know if you have questions. And as I said, I'm going to be around for a few months, so anytime really. Thank you.
Since you built in phases, can you get baryogenesis out of this somehow? Since you've got CP violation built in?
Yeah, right. So I think I advertised that I was going to talk about that, but I am actually not going to talk about that. But in principle, yes, because this Lagrangian that I've shown you this let's go back. Ooh, this Lagrangian is, or this potential is a potential that people have looked at in the context of composite Higgs models. Not where it has necessarily the inflaton. And these models do realize electroweak baryogenesis. But yeah, that's in the works. We're trying to look at that now.
Constrain the parameters in such a way that it makes predictions for what's happening elsewhere, like inflation?
I don't know yet. Possibly, but yeah.
Yes. So what kind of scales were you having if your symmetry breaking scale F in the model scale?
Oh, that at this point, that's a free parameter.
Okay, but in the plot, things that were shown passing Planck and all that was F of order n Planck also.
Right. So this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
no, but in principle, you can go as low as you want. The only thing that you are constrained by is that you need to have, I think, a reheating temperature that needs to be of a particular order. And but in principle, it can be maybe around 10 TeV as well. And what happens in this plot then is that you just move to predicting node tensors.
So how did that work? So that's the key thought. So you're saying that you have F smaller, and the normal reason why you want F to be large is that you want the slow roll parameters to be small. So you get slow roll parameters that are small for a different reason.
Yeah. So
what's the reason?
The reason is the cancellation between these two things. So in natural inflation, you only have this one term, right? F is basically the only thing you can use to get small slow roll parameters.
So you're saying the first derivative is for free, being zero, and then you tune the second derivative to be zero near it, lambda.
Yes.
And because of that, you didn't need to do any of that.
Yeah, because of that, F remains a free parameter.
So you've sort of got two bits of tuning there. You've got tuning coming from this to keep the inflaton potential flat enough. and then you've presumably got tuning coming from the electrical weak part of it, getting the Higgs electrical weak bit stuff, right? Which
yeah.
would be worse for larger F.
Yes.
So one side is good for large, one side is good to have large F, and the other side is good to have smaller F. So what's the sort of minimal tune you can get with F somewhere in the middle? Is there?
Sorry, why did you want?
As we make F smaller,
mm-hmm.
we presumably need to tune this lambda cancellation more finely
yeah.
in order to get the slow bulk conditions coming out.
Yeah, that's
properly.
Right. Yeah.
As we make F closer to M Planck, presumably we need to tune the symmetry breaking electrical weak stuff
yeah.
more carefully to get the peaks.
Sure, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So presumably there's some trade off between each type of tuning.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, yeah.
So what minimal tuning we need?
Yeah, we haven't actually properly done the estimates. I've looked at it in the context of Goldstone inflation, but not in this sort of in this model where you have a tension between the two. No, I haven't. Yeah.
At the weak scale, what's the tuning is to keep the precise value that you chose your lambda F squared formula? Is that the tuning?
Yes, the tuning to keep the slow bulk parameters.
But that's something that's like a 1 in 100 tuning, and if everybody's electric weak scale, that's not so bad, right?
What 1 in 100 tuning was for what values?
I'm imagining the precision with which that lambda F squared has to be equal to minus M squared over 2 is something like 2. It'll have to, if you deviate from that by something bigger than 0.01 or something, mm-hmm. that's probably when you start to ruin the slow roll, I'm guessing.
Yes. But how much smaller this needs to be than this? That's a function of F over M Planck squared. So yeah. All right.
Probably a good place to.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so let's thank Tina again.